This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening, I'm Claudine Chong, and on today's edition of The Informer, we look at what the recommendations of the Victorian Royal Commission into Family Violence might mean for LGBTIQ communities. If you've got a view on this, let us know. Email onair at joy.org.au or text the studio on 0427 joy949. Last week, the Victorian Royal Commission into Family Violence delivered its report and recommendations. Among the 227 recommendations, and the Victorian government has promised to adopt all of them, there were four that address LGBTIQ communities in particular. Earlier today, I spoke with Bianca Philiborne, a researcher at the Australian Research Centre for Sex, Health and Society, about what we currently know about family violence in LGBTIQ communities. I'm speaking to Bianca Philiborne, who is a research officer at the Australian Research Centre for Sex, Health and Society, or ARCHES for short. Welcome back to Joy, Bianca.
Thanks, Claudine.
So, first of all, the Royal Commission's report is over 2,000 pages long. How much of the report have you read?
Mostly just the section on LGBT communities at the moment. I am planning to get through the rest at some point, but it's pretty hefty reading.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to take a week. It's going to take a bit longer, I think.
Exactly.
So as you said, the report dedicates a chapter to LGBTI communities, among other special interest communities, and it draws research done at various centres such as ARCHES. Were you involved in any of these submissions?
I actually wasn't, but some of my colleagues were, and it's something that we discussed at length at ARCHES. And like you said, a lot of the research that the report's drawn on has come from ARCHES, so I'm quite familiar with that. And some of our colleagues actually gave evidence at the Royal Commission as well.
So research in this area is still quite scarce compared to research on other communities. But what do we know so far? Is family violence more or less prevalent among LGBTI communities?
Yeah, so I mean, the research that's out there at the moment suggests that it is possibly more prevalent, or at the very least on par with what we see in heterosexual relationships. But it's quite difficult because there's such limited research, and what has been done tends to be with quite small sample sizes, so it's difficult to kind of extrapolate from that. But from what we've seen so far, there's quite high rates of intimate partner violence and also family violence experienced by LGBTIQ people.
And looking at just intimate partner violence, do we know whether there's a difference between gay men and lesbian populations?
Yeah, so some of the research tends to suggest that it's a bit higher in lesbian relationships, and particularly transgender and intersex populations seem to have the highest rates from what we've seen. But it's also difficult because there's a lot of barriers for men to, you know, identify and discuss and disclose experiences of violence. But at the same time, we don't have a lot of research with gay men about the barriers that they face to disclosing. So a lot of these kind of arguments, I guess, are based on broader research on gender and gender norms.
And it seems that a lot of the discourse around family violence, especially, talked about as male on female.
Yeah, that's right. So I think, you know, anything that happens outside of that kind of heteronormative paradigm is really, it's really obscured, and it's really minimised and ignored. And I think that also contributes to this sort of lack of recognition and lack of reporting. You know, if you're not seeing your experiences talked about and represented, you know, it can be harder, I think, to kind of, one, identify what's happening in the first place, but two, to feel like you can, you know, talk to other people about it and that you'll be believed and taken seriously.
Yeah, so it's like that sort of cycle of visibility or Or invisibility.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I think it also means, one of the things that came out of the Royal Commission report is the lack of access to services, and that, you know, a lot of services just aren't even set up with LGBTIQ people in mind. They're not necessarily aware of the relationship dynamics, what the particular needs of that, you know, client group might be. It's not clear to, you know, LGBTIQ people that they can go to those services and that they'll be accessed and welcomed there. And in fact, in some cases, we know that they're not. So I think, yeah, it's a huge problem.
So what are some of the examples of where they're not made welcome?
Yeah, well, I think shelters is the big problem. So a lot of the domestic violence shelters are set up for female or cisgendered female mm-hmm. victims. So if you, for example, are a gay male, there's not necessarily anywhere for you to go. There's not, that I'm aware of anyway, shelters that service gay men. Transgender women as well tend to be excluded from those shelters because they're not seen as being real women, and that's in...
Is that officially sanctioned discrimination, or is it more informal?
Some of it is officially sanctioned. So my understanding is that some of these shelters do have exemption from the Sex Discrimination Act because they're set up to mm-hmm. provide safe spaces for women. Mm-hmm. So they are allowed to discriminate in that way. Likewise, some of these services are funded through... they're provided through religious institutions, and they're also able to legally discriminate on the basis of their religious faith. I think the other issue is that even if they don't discriminate in practice, there's a perception from people who want to use those services that they're going to be discriminated against, or that they're not safe spaces for them to go to. So even just the fact that these services are being run through religious institutions is going to form a really big barrier for a lot of people wanting to access those services.
One of the recommendations of this report is to promote the rainbow tick accreditation. Do you think that would make a difference?
Yeah, look, I think it's definitely a great starting point. I mean, I think it's something that all services everywhere should be doing anyway. Absolutely. I think we've seen that domestic and family violence services in particular have sort of lagged behind other service sectors in doing the Rainbow Tick accreditation. So definitely, I think that's a really important first step in enabling them to better and more effectively work with the LGBTIQ communities. But the other problem is that we don't actually know what the sort of best practice service models look like for LGBTIQ communities. So obviously having those mainstream services being trained is going to be really important, but whether there's a need for, you know, specialist services or what the differences might be within the LGBTIQ communities, because there's a huge amount of diversity. So we might need to look further down the track at what different groups' needs are and how we can best meet them, and just training the mainstream services mm-hmm. might not be enough.
So are there specialist services anywhere in Australia at this stage?
Not very many. So places like Drummond Street mm-hmm. Services do provide some family violence and intimate partner violence counselling, but most of the services are set up for dealing with heterosexual couples. There's definitely a fantastic website that was set up in New South Wales called Another Closet, and they've mm-hmm. got some great resources on there. Unfortunately, all the services are New South Wales based yes. ones. I think Drummond Street Services is the main place in Victoria that I'm aware of. I think Victorian AIDS Council, I believe, do some training for male perpetrators of same-sex mm-hmm. attracted intimate partner violence. Apart from that, there's really very, very little.
Yeah. So what kind of research in this area is being done in Australia, for example, at Arches or other places you're aware of?
We're trying to get a study off the ground looking at sort of best practice models for service provision. So watch this space. Hopefully we'll get that successfully funded.
Well, thanks, Bianca, for visiting us.
Fantastic. Thank you.
That was Bianca Philiborne from the Australian Research Centre for Sex, Health and Society. Having said all that, if you are experiencing or think you are experiencing family violence, you can call the National Council Counselling Service 1800 RESPECT. In an emergency, you should call 000. Have you got something to say on this topic? Let us know. Email onair@joy.org.au or text the studio on 0427-JOY949. This is The Informer, Joy's brand new current affairs program. Right now, we'll be talking to Sean Mulcahy, who is the co-convener of the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, and he joins us in the studio tonight. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you so much for having me on, Claudine.
Thank you. And the Royal Commission's report includes many references to the lobby submission, so congratulations on that. Can listeners find the submission online?
Yes, I believe if they go onto the Royal Commission's website, they can still access the submission online. Plus, the Royal Commission's report has a whole section on LGBTI family violence, and that's in volume 5 of its many volumes. They weigh something like 4.9 kilograms, I believe I was told, at the lockup that morning. But if they go straight to volume 5, they can access the information around LGBTI violence and the Commission's recommendations on that.
Great. So we heard earlier about some of the unique challenges facing LGBTIQ people who experience family violence. So let's talk about solutions now, or possible solutions. The Commission's made four recommendations in that chapter, specifically related to our communities. First of all, are you confident that they will all be implemented?
What's really exciting is that the Victorian government has committed to implementing all of the 227 recommendations of the Royal Commission, including the four specific recommendations around LGBTI family violence. What's also really encouraging is that the Royal Commission has put some timelines around implementation. So we'll be working with government and indeed all sides of politics to ensure that the recommendations that are specific to LGBTI victims of family violence and perpetrators and those affected by it are implemented within the timeframes that the Commission has set down.
Let's talk about some of these recommendations. One of the most urgent, I think, is to improve access to crisis accommodation, especially, for example, for trans women. So what are the possible solutions here?
Well, the Commission has recommended funding for safe accommodation for a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and intersex victims of family violence. And we, as you said, know that it's a particular issue for trans victims of family violence. There have been instances of transgender women being turned away from emergency accommodation or being told that they can't access it unless they have had surgery. There's also been instances of trans men having to present as women in order to gain access to generalist family violence services. So it's pleasing that the Commission has recognised that this is an issue, and it's pleasing that they've recommended funding around safe accommodation for LGBTI victims.
So might that include, say, separate housing facilities?
Well, it's encouraging on a broader level that the Commission has recommended separate housing facilities as something to be followed rather than the communal housing model. And that in some ways will address the issues that are confronted by particularly trans and gender diverse people accessing emergency accommodation. But that isn't the be all and end all. We do know that services need to be more LGBTI inclusive. And the Commission has made a number of recommendations to ensure that that happens.
Another issue with accommodation and service providers is that faith-based organisations do or believe that they can refuse services to LGBTI people. Is that in fact the case currently, that they can discriminate in this area?
Yes, unfortunately, under Victorian law, we have broad exemptions for religious organisations that allow them to discriminate against LGBTI people in the provision of services, including in emergency accommodation. We're hopeful of working with all sides of politics to ensure that those exemptions are removed or at the very least substantially amended to ensure that those people that are accessing services when they really desperately need them can have access to them.
Another barrier is to getting help is the community's past history with the police and justice system. How can this relationship be improved, particularly when it comes to police responding to family violence incidents?
I think it's pleasing that the Commission has recognised that this is a significant problem, and we do know that there is huge levels of underreporting of LGBTI family violence. Almost 2 in 3 people don't even talk about their experiences of family violence to another person, let alone to the police. I do think there's a lot more that we can be doing in ensuring that there's more pathways to reporting. I think the Anti-Violence Project in Victoria has a fantastic online reporting system that allow these issues to be directed to police, but through a system where people feel comfortable that their issues will be dealt with sensitively and properly addressed. So we need to start looking at some more innovative solutions to enable people to report their experiences of family violence in as safe a way as possible.
And is this something that the LGBT liaison officers within the police are involved with or could be involved with?
Yes, definitely. And we've worked with Victoria Police over a number of years to ensure that the gay and lesbian liaison officers are rolled out more across the state and that they're properly trained. And indeed, the whole police force is properly trained so that any LGBTI victim of family violence or street harassment or violence can have confidence when they raise the issue with the police that it will be appropriately addressed.
One of the recommendations is to require family violence providers services get Rainbow Tick accreditation. Can you tell us what that involves?
Well, that's probably the most exciting recommendation to come out of the Royal Commission. The Rainbow Tick accreditation is a process that's run by Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria, and it ensures that services are LGBTI friendly so that LGBTI people can have the confidence of knowing that when they access a particular service that their issues will be properly addressed. What is also pleasing is that the Commission's recommended that there be additional funding to enable family violence services to get this accreditation. We know that these services are already financially strapped, so it's really pleasing to see that the Commission's recommended that there be additional funding to enable them to do that. And it's really pleasing that a number of providers have come out and said, this is great, this is what we need, and that they want to be inclusive, and hopefully the Rainbow Tick accreditation process will show them how.
Are there any providers that already have this accreditation?
There are a few, not in the family violence sphere that I'm aware of. Mostly it's around aged care facilities, and also some councils have it for other services that they provide. So this would be a real first in ensuring that family violence services are LGBTI friendly and accredited as such.
And finally, what do you think this report might mean for family violence and LGBT communities around Australia? Do you think the other states will be watching how it goes in Victoria? Is this a kind of trailblazer?
It is. It is trailblazing, and it's really pleasing that the Commission's acknowledged that this has been an invisible problem for so many years, and that all parts of the family violence sector, from police to the courts to specialist family violence services, must improve their response to LGBTI victims of family violence, and that we have been inadequately supported by service providers to date. And that's not through any mistake on their part. It's because this is a system that has been struggling under limited funding, and these issues have never been properly addressed. And I'm hoping that the Commission will bring these issues to light, and that we will see a broader discourse around family violence that's not purely focused on intimate partner violence in a heterosexual context, but takes account of the diversity of family violence, whether that's elder abuse, whether it's violence towards LGBTI kids from parents that don't accept their sexual orientation or gender identity, or whether it is, unfortunately, the violence between two same-sex or gender-diverse people in a couple.
Well, it sounds like there's plenty that's still to be done, but that this report's a bit of a watershed. So thank you for talking us through that, Sean.
And thank you so much for having me on.
And again, if you are experiencing or think you're experiencing family violence, you can call the National Counselling Service 1-800-RESPECT, and in an emergency, you should call 000. And a full rundown on today's story will be on the Joy website shortly. That's joy.org.au. Up next, though, we'll find out what the latest news from the UK is with Will Stroud from Attitude. You're listening to The Informer, Joy's brand new current affairs programme.
Crossing over to the UK for our nightly look at news overseas, we talked to Will Stroud from Attitude magazine, straight from London. Good evening, I guess it is for you.
Yes, and good morning to you, James. Speak to you.
Now, tell us, there's been quite a big move in the UK, well, a big decision made by the government, by the British Health Service, the NHS, I guess, to say that they will not be delivering or making PrEP available. Can you just let us know, to begin with, what the status is of PrEP in the UK? I understand there's been a trial that's been conducted. Is this the outcome of the trial?
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, this is a sort of decision we've been sort of waiting on in the UK for, about 18 months now, really. Obviously, PrEP, sort of pre-exposure prophylaxis, it's sort of antiretroviral HIV medication that when taken sort of daily, regularly, sort of has been shown in studies to sort of significantly reduce the chances of contracting HIV. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in the UK, we've had the PROUD study, which has been sort of looking at this sort of last year amongst the sort of, you know, test cases, and found that, you know, along with all the other studies, that it was highly effective in reducing the spread of, you know, HIV and transmission rates in that time. Obviously, sort of what we've had in the last couple of weeks is NHS England confirming that they will not be sort of funding a wide-scale rollout of, you know, PrEP, mm-hmm. You know, at all, gay men included, which has obviously been sort of met with a lot of sort of shock and, you know, sort of upset, especially, you know, from gay health charities and also sort of just HIV, AIDS charities, sexual health charities in general.
I'd imagine they are quite shocked about how this has come about. Have they talked about what the reasons are behind this?
Well, absolutely. So the official line in the sort of statement they released was that they said that sort of local authorities, you know, in England and Wales, sort of are responsible for frontline sort of HIV prevention services. But this sort of wasn't exactly met with a great response because, you know, NHS sort of, they do take control of other sort of things like sort of all contraceptive pills. And, you know, when you have a sort of huge medical breakthrough sort of like PrEP that's been shown to be so effective for sort of them to sort of, they've sort of reneged responsibility in a way and said, well, it's, you know, it's that, nothing to do with us. But obviously you've got to look at this in the wider context of sort of obviously rising HIV rates sort of in gay men at the moment, and also sort of HIV, you know, funding cuts that are going on across the board sort of at local level. So yeah, obviously it's provoked sort of certainly a sort of loud response, having this news.
Right.
And obviously the fact that it's been sort of already, the ball has started rolling, sort of this PrEP is available in the US, France, Israel, and, you know, Canada, I think, just earlier this year. So this is sort of clearly where the sort of medical sort of, you know, progression is going. So it's sort of, you know, disappointing that, you know, the UK will not be following suit, anytime soon.
Mm. Well, yeah, it does seem like a bit of a step back. We won't have PrEP here for a couple of years, but it'll be interesting to see how this folds out in the UK there. Just quickly, though, the GLAAD Awards occurred in the last few hours, I guess. Well, last couple of days, I guess, depending on where you are. Some controversy there with one of the wins.
Yeah, absolutely. Sort of, well, you know, sort of a big story we've been talking about that sort of our readers have been involved in is the GLAAD Awards and Caitlyn Jenner's win, which she won for sort of outstanding documentary series for her e-reality show I Am Kate.
Oh my god.
So yeah, obviously this has provoked a sort of, you know, she's been a polarizing figure at the best of times, but really over the last few months we've seen sort of public opinion sort of really turn against Caitlyn Jenner sort of as the US presidential election has taken off, and, you know, sort of her support for Republican nominee Ted Cruz and sort of having her sort of political views more and more dissected. So yeah, while obviously sort of IMK has been a sort of great sort of, you know, primetime showcase for transgender issues, obviously sort of having sort of a such a controversial figure pick up this award, which she did. She picked up sort of in tandem with Jazz Jennings, who's a 15-year-old transgender activist who also has her own rap series. They sort of shared this award. But yeah, it has provoked a lot of reaction. I think there was actually, during her speech, someone in the audience yelled charlatan at her and actually left the sort of the award ceremony in Los Angeles. So,
right. Well,
it's definitely been a big story.
Yeah, I guess it's another one of those times where we can say only in America.
Yes, absolutely. Nothing if nothing.
Well, Will, thank you so much for joining us, and we're looking forward to speaking to you every week here on The Informer. If anyone wants to catch up on any of the stories that you've heard about today, you can head to the Attitude website, attitude.co.uk, or find them on Facebook.
Thanks very much for having me.
And thank you to today's guests, Bianca Philiborne from the Australian Research Centre for Sex, Health and Society, and Sean Mulcahy from the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby. Today's head producer was myself, with additional production from Bart. For a podcast of today's program and our other stories, visit joy.org.au/theinformer. And we'll be back tomorrow at 6:30. Up next is World Wide Wave with news affecting LGBTI people around the world. I'm Claudine. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.